Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Help TVO create a better world through the power of learning. Visit TVO.org and make a tax-deductible donation today.
In the depths of pandemic lockdowns and social distancing, many people, desperate for something good, sought out and adopted pets of all kinds. Now, those puppies and kittens are all grown up, and sadly, some are reportedly winding up far from being treasured family members. With us now for more, in Maple Ridge, British Columbia, Kathy Powelson, Executive Director of Paws for Hope Animal Foundation. And here in our studio, Phil Nichols. He's the Chief Operating Officer of the Toronto Humane Society, and Camille Labchuk, Executive Director of Animal Justice. And we are happy to have you two here in our studio. Phil, I don't think you've been here before. First time for you?
First time.
Great. Camille, good to see you again. And Kathy, thanks for joining us from the left coast. Phil, let's start with this. Rouge National Park in Toronto, very well-known place. It has apparently seen a threefold increase in abandoned animals in the park. We talk dogs, we're talking cats, we're talking rabbits, we're talking even, apparently, reptiles. Why is this happening?
Yeah, I mean, it's happening from what we've seen because of access to care, and shelters are running at capacity, right? Animal shelters across the country are experiencing high demand of animals being surrendered and brought in. A lot of them are having to turn people away. When they're being turned away, they're left without places to choose, and some of them are sadly just being abandoned outside in parks. And it's the ones we find are in parks. The question is how many are being abandoned outside of, you know, well-trafficked areas by people that are not being found.
Camille, do you want to follow up on that? How much of people abandoning their pets in parks is going on right now?
You know, unfortunately, we're seeing a reported increase in this, and I think Phil is totally right. There's likely a lot more that we don't know about. We're really just scratching the surface with what we see. And, you know, people, the reasons for this are obvious, but people are no longer at home as much as they used to be. People are facing financial crunches and making difficult decisions on that basis. And we failed to promote a responsible pet guardianship culture in this province and failed to encourage people to think about having pets as part of their families and offering a life to those animals instead of buying animals just to fulfill a need that they have.
I'm going to follow up on that responsible guardianship angle in a little bit, but let me get Kathy in here right now and just give us your experience in Western Canada. Are you seeing the same things that we are here?
We certainly are seeing, as Phil mentioned, our shelters and rescues are full. We don't have any areas where we're seeing mass abandonments, but we know that this is happening for the reasons that Phil mentioned, access to care and the shelters are full. We also are seeing an increase in people's individual experiences and them facing crises and needing sometimes just a temporary place for their pet to be, and there not being that option as well. And you know, we and my colleagues in BC, when someone reaches out to us for help, if we're not able to assist them, unfortunately what's happening is there's nowhere for us to refer them to. And so, you know, we don't know what's happening to these animals when we get off the phone and someone is in crisis and they're going to lose their housing. That's a big issue in BC right now. Lack of pet-friendly housing, lack of housing in general, lack of pet-friendly housing has created an absolute crisis. Our program provides temporary foster care for up to 6 months. And even that amount of time is not enough for some people to find safe and affordable housing where they can keep their pets.
Phil, do you do that at the Humane Society, this foster care for 6 months type of thing?
Yeah, we have an urgent care foster program for individuals experiencing temporary crisis. We tend to cap closer to about a year and 12 months, but similar, it still sometimes isn't enough. And that program's demand has been seeing a really skyrocketing rate of entrance requests over the last 2 years.
What generally is happening? I mean, I think we can speculate here, but you've seen this firsthand. What's happening in people's lives that would warrant them going to you and saying, I can't do it anymore, you've got to take my pet for X number of months?
There's a wide variety. We've been seeing an increase in housing instability issues and individuals coming in for that, but there's also domestic violence that animals will come in for through the program. But I would say those two pieces are pretty key. The housing instability has been causing quite a rise over the last couple months.
Camille, let's go back at this. Responsible guardianship as it relates to pets. What are you getting at there?
Yeah, you know, I think in this province, we largely treat people's companion animals as their own problem. And we don't provide enough social support through public funding and other, you know, public provincial mechanisms to support people in keeping their animals with them. I don't think you generally see people who want to give up animals and who feel good about that decision. I suspect a lot of abandonment has to do not only with inability to find a place for those animals to go, but also the social shame of feeling like a failure and being unable to keep that animal with you in your own home. But you know what we see in this province, Steve, is and across the country, is largely governments treating these sheltering type issues as a private problem that charities should address, instead of providing, you know, public infrastructure and really strong supports to make sure that, you know, shelters have the capacity, that rescues have the capacity to deal with this question and this issue when people can't care for animals any longer.
So what does that look like? If you know, in your best world, what does a more community-based approach look like?
Yeah, you know, I think we do some public funding of some shelter operations, especially when you look at larger cities like Toronto. Toronto Animal Services receives funding for operating shelters. But most shelter and rescue operations are run on donations. They're run on volunteer power. They're run because people, out of the goodness of their hearts, believe it's the right thing to do for to care for animals. And that, of course, is the case. But there's also a lot of social and public benefits that accrue from making sure that we have this public infrastructure to take in cats, dogs, rabbits, reptiles, other animals who need homes.
Reptiles?
Reptiles.
Like what?
You know, lizards, snakes, iguanas, these are all animals that are, unfortunately, are still legal to keep and possess and own in you know, most places in the country. And, you know, it's often a very challenging animal to care for. People don't typically understand or always understand the needs that those animals have. And sometimes that can lead them to want to give them up and abandon them, sadly.
Kathy, can you help me on that one? People have reptiles where you are, snakes, lizards, that kind of thing?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with Camilla 100%. We advocate, you know, that pets should be included in the social safety net. And so when we're looking at supporting families, we should be looking at supporting all members of the families, including the companion animals. And that would extend to providing funding to organizations that are supporting the animals. Because of the work that Paws for Hope does, we, you know, we're often working with the same families that our colleagues in social services are supporting. We're just supporting their companion animals, and they're supporting the humans. But really, we need a system that is looking at animal welfare not only as a social service, but as a social justice issue. Because what we are seeing is families that are struggling are disproportionately marginalized and don't have access to human services in the same way that they are struggling with access to animal services.
In which case, Phil, what do you need?
There's a lot that's needed on that, I think. And we're lucky at this point that the Vet Act in Ontario is up for review. And revision, because the entire model of how veterinary care and access to care is delivered in the province needs an overhaul. It's an antiquated and dated system, and it's preventing right now solutions that could make care more accessible to individuals and pets and families from existing. The last major review happened in the late 80s, and it's time to not only be caught up, but also to be forward-looking and, you know, evaluate the models that can make care accessible. We focus a lot on sheltering and reactionary programs, which are necessary because the preventative programming and the preventative services aren't there to support people before they hit their breaking point and before those animals end up without anywhere else to go.
I'm sure most people watching this don't understand the nuances of what you're trying to advance here right now, but is it a question of what? More storage, more care, more what?
I think it's more capacity within the industry. Care providers within the veterinary industry across the country, there's a national shortage. Right. There's not enough veterinarians, there's not enough veterinary technicians and other paraprofessionals to deliver the services to the volume of animals that exist in the country that need support. And the models of care delivery aren't sufficient enough to be accessible. So at Toronto Humane, we're taking different approach to access to care and looking at alternative models of veterinary care services that can provide vaccinations and preventative wellness services and spays and neuters at rates that are more accessible and affordable for people that are experiencing challenges, in an effort to prevent people from hitting the breaking point where animals are needing to be surrendered to the shelter. There's a huge capacity issue just within the infrastructure to deliver care going on.
Camille, would an uptick in adoptions solve this?
I think that would certainly help, but we can't just look at adoptions and on, you know, the demand side of things for animals. We also have to look at the supply side of things for animals. So we know, Steve, that during the pandemic, everyone wanted a puppy, everyone wanted a cat, shelters were empty, and enterprising people, backyard breeders, puppy mills, stepped in to fill that void by breeding animals at astronomical rates, selling them for, you know, astronomical prices, to profit from people's desire for companionship during the pandemic. So, you know, in a sense, we sort of glutted the marketplace with animals, you know, who were being purchased and sold instead of being adopted. And some of those animals are now the ones who are being given up to shelters. That's why adoption is so important and public infrastructure to encourage adoption is so important. But I think another piece of that puzzle is that we don't actually regulate dog breeding or cat breeding or any other animal breeding in most of this country.
I was going to ask you about that. Should there have been a crackdown during that puppy mill breeding situation?
Yeah, well, I think one of the concerns is what conditions were these animals being kept in so that so many baby cats and baby dogs could be pumped out at such a high volume to meet that demand. You know, we know that puppy mills run untrammeled in so many places in this country, the same thing for kitten mills. And, you know, in Ontario, for instance, and virtually everywhere else, the government doesn't even know who's breeding dogs because there's no requirement to get a license, there's no requirement to get an inspection to be approved to start breeding dogs. And governments have no way of following up and checking to see what those conditions are like. And when puppy mills are busted because authorities maybe get a tip from the public, we often find just appalling conditions. You know, mother dogs kept for years in tiny cages in filthy, appalling situations with horrific injuries. We know oftentimes these dogs who are sold to the public come with health problems because of poor breeding practices and poor veterinary care. So I think it's something the governments really need to get a grasp on.
I well remember, at least I think I well remember, there's a guy who's on Toronto City Council right now named Mike Cole, but I think when he was a member of the Ontario Legislature, he held a press conference at Queen's Park to crack down on puppy mills that were abusing animals, and he broke down in the middle of his press conference, overcome at the sadness of what he was seeing because he was so appalled at what he was seeing. This is a thing, isn't it?
It's a horrible thing. I've been present for those puppy mill busts, and you just see these dogs whose fur is matted, who reek of urine and feces, who've been confined in basements, in warehouses and sheds, and forced to breed for years and years. There's really no excuse for it, and I think a lot of provincial politicians have taken note of this issue before, but no government has ever stood up and said, we're going to regulate puppy breeding, we're going to regulate animal breeding and get control over this problem.
Kathy, is this an issue where you are?
Yeah, absolutely. And recently, we have seen some more large-scale removals from our BCSPCA from breeders who ramped up their operations during the pandemic to try to meet this need. And now that the demand is gone, they are overcrowded with puppies and so have turned to the SPCA to take these animals in. So, I mean, that is, you know, typically or just a pandemic puppy, the definition of a pandemic puppy right there. And we had a government that had drafted legislation for breeding registrations, and it didn't move anywhere. And so, you know, we were optimistic about 6 years ago, but again, there is no regulation. There's no regulations for rescues as well, and I think that is also very problematic. We saw at the beginning of the pandemic organizations that were mass importing van loads of puppies from the United States in almost equally horrific conditions as we see in some puppy mills. They were crammed in crates. They were adopted off in the midnight in parking lots. And then, you know, many of these animals were sick. Some of them had to be euthanized because they should never have left the shelter. They were so ill. And then what we're seeing now is many of these animals that have come through have behavior under health issues that their families are not prepared or able to deal with.
Let me just add this. Kathy, you do a blog, and one of the issues that you have raised in the blog is, and I must confess, it's been going through my head while we've been having this conversation, and that is the tendency for us to be rather judgy of the people who give up their animals in the middle of this circumstance they find themselves in. Here's Kathy writing in her blog, if we reject the assumptions that people are, quote, giving up on their pets and that unhoused or low-income people can't take care of their animals, then we can see the truth, that the real issues we should be focusing on are the lack of pet-friendly housing, poverty, domestic violence, illegal breeders and traffickers, access to veterinary care. That's Kathy on the record on that. Camille, why don't you pick up on that? It's easy to be judgy here. It's tougher to be compassionate. Why do we need more of the latter and less of the former?
No, it's always struck me as funny, and I could not agree more with Kathy's points. But you know, so some people have great compassion for animals, but not for the humans who share their lives with those animals. And I think that's part of just being a well-rounded, compassionate, you know, generous human being, is appreciating that people get into difficult circumstances. And it's not their fault that inequality is massive in the society and that they have to make those tough choices. Kathy made a really good point in her blog, which is the lack of pet-friendly accommodations and housing in this country. In Ontario, we are lucky in a sense because there actually are laws that say that you can include a no pets clause in a lease. Now, that doesn't prevent a landlord from discriminating against somebody who's got a dog at the outset and refusing to rent to them, but they can't kick them out ostensibly once they're in a rental unit. That doesn't exist anywhere in the rest of the country. And so you've got all these folks who share their lives with companion animals and are desperately seeking accommodation. And we know how difficult finding housing is for so many people, especially if they're low income. And then they face this added challenge of having animals that they want to continue living with who are parts of their family, and being forced into this impossible situation of giving up those animals or living in their cars.
So do you think we need a law that prohibits landlords from tossing tenants if they have pets?
Absolutely. This is something that would be incredibly helpful in addressing the pet challenges that people face when they're looking for accommodation. You know, there's ways to deal before anybody starts raising the alarm about what about landlords and their rights. There's ways to deal with tenants who cause problems, including with animals who cause problems. But that doesn't mean that people should be denied the chance of a place to live from the outset just because they live with a cat or a dog or a guinea pig or a rabbit.
Or a snake or a lizard.
I mean, prefer that they don't adopt those pets in the first place, but if they have them, they should stay with their families.
I gotcha. Judginess over compassion. Where are you on that, Phil?
It's rampant in animal welfare. I mean, and we need compassion, and I agree with all the points made. The biggest issue with that is, so long as we're focusing on judgment, we're not actually going to be looking at real-world solutions that can address the underlying problem and the root cause. And I think the sector has shown that. I mean, we spent decades working on the judgment and the reaction piece, and it hasn't resolved the problem. If we start meeting people where they're at and coming up with solutions that are actually going to address the underlying issue, we can prevent the problem from existing at the same degree that it does right now. And we're not going to do that so long as we're judging people. And we're sure not going to know how broad the problem is if they're not even willing to come to us because they're afraid of judgment. Hmm.
Kathy, I take no joy in saying this, but certainly if you travel through downtown Toronto, and I imagine it's the same in Vancouver, you will see homeless people outdoors on very cold days, and as they have their blankets over them, they have their blankets over their dogs as well. There are many people who don't have a place to live, but who have big enough hearts to actually take care of their companions while they're in very precarious circumstances. You see that too, I assume?
Yeah, absolutely. And before COVID, we operated free animal health clinics, and so we would bring a team of veterinarians and vet technicians to homeless shelters and other service agencies, and we would do a free clinic. And, you know, we did them for 8 years. And over the time, you know, our veterinarians would say that the animals that they saw at these clinics were as healthy as the animals that they see in their private practice. And in fact, dogs that they see in these at these free clinics are generally more socialized than the dogs that they see in private practice, because dogs are doing what dogs are meant to do, and that's roaming with their pack, right? And they're out, and they're not sitting on a couch for 8 hours a day. They had healthier body weights because they were getting the exercise that they need. And you know, one of the things that they saw more of was fleas and parasites, but those things are relatively easy to treat. And so the, you know, that the notion that homeless pets are suffering is not well supported. And also, again, people are concerned about the animal, but they're not concerned about the person. Like they're more worried about the fact that there's a dog sleeping homeless on the street than they are their person, which to me is very problematic, because behind every animal in need, there is a person in need as well. And we can't have a healthy community or healthy society until we have healthy people who can take care of their pets. And it's a very archaic approach to be focusing only on the animals. And even if you don't like people and your focus is on the animals, the most sustainable and effective approach is bettering the lives of human beings so that the companion animals have a better life as well. And we're not just in some sort of circle where we are just helping the animals, not helping the people. We'll never get out of this situation if we're not looking at this problem in a more holistic way.
I like the way you put that, because I think we all know people who don't like people, but they love pets plenty. And, you know, okay, for the people watching or listening to this right now, tell them one thing they can do to help.
You know, support your local shelter, your humane society, support rescues. Also, if you yourself are thinking about bringing an animal into your family, please, please, please adopt, and don't buy that animal from a breeder or from a puppy mill, and especially not from Kijiji, because that's almost certainly going to be from a puppy mill. I encourage people to think about what they can offer to an animal and what type of animal in what type of situation is compatible with their lifestyle. You know, are you a busy family that's always on the go and might do better with a cat rather than a dog? That's the type of thing that rescues and shelters can advise you on. They can look at your situation and say, look, we have this adoptable animal who's going to fit in really well with your family. And that's the type of thing that makes sure that that adoption is going to be sustainable in the long term, instead of just a fleeting, you know, thing where somebody buys a puppy for a Christmas or a birthday present or a chick for Easter, which is never good.
Gotcha. I want to thank Kathy Pallison for being out there in British Columbia for us on our program tonight, Phil Nichols from the Toronto Humane Society, and Camille Labchuk, Executive Director of Animal Justice. Great to have all three of you on TVO tonight. Many thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Agenda with Steve Paikin is made possible through generous philanthropic contributions from viewers like you. Thank you for supporting TVO's journalism.